Good afternoon. I'm Risa Hayes, and welcome to the afternoon session. In keeping with our theme this year of honoring our, as Donald said, respecting the past, navigating the present, charting the future, we have three sessions for you this afternoon. Each of exemplifies one of those. And our first session is Lessons Learned from the PRO Consortium Along the Path to PRO Instrument Qualification, a case study. As we respect or honor the past, we look at it and we try to learn from it. Some of the things we look at and they said they didn't go so well, and we certainly want to learn them and not repeat them. And we've had plenty of those, unfortunately, through our 5 years in the PRO Consortium. But we also have things that went well, and we would like to repeat them, but improve upon them. And that's what this case study is about. So I'm going to turn this over to Inkelita Nike, is I pronounce that right? And April Negley, who are leads, they are senior scientists at Eli Lilly and Company. They are going to be your moderators for this session. The disclaimer is the same as has been. I have just introduced them, so now we will have the session participants, and I will turn it over to them.
Thank you, Risa. Before I get into the presentation, we are here recognizing Lori Burke for one, but we'd also need to recognize Risa Hayes as this may be her last attendance at one of these workshops, and she is retiring this year. So thank you, Risa, for all that you've done in helping also lead this effort. So. Okay, so I'll just give a brief presentation of the experience that we had with a stakeholder workshop where we were trying to reach consensus for the rheumatoid arthritis working group. And on our panel today, we have representatives Cliff Bingham, Ashley Slagle, Amy Leon, Lee Simon, Sarah Yim, and Inkelita Nikai, who's also co-chair of the RA Working Group. So very different perspectives of stakeholder involvement and when it should be involved and how it should be involved. So we look forward to their discussion in a few minutes. So quickly, a brief overview of our RA working group and the stakeholder workshop that we've been talking about since 2012. So the rheumatoid arthritis working group started way back in 2010 when Inkelita actually submitted a feasibility document when CPATH was looking to form new working groups. You know, what were those disease states where there were critical needs from a patient perspective for improved measurement and the development of those measures? So 2011, the working group was approved by CPATH based on FDA feedback that they would be willing to participate in the qualification of a PRO measure in rheumatoid arthritis. So in March 2011, Inkelita and I became the co-chairs, and currently we have representatives from industry, from GSK, Merck, Novo Nordisk, Takeda, and UCB, and we're always open to other industry members joining us at any time, so please feel free to reach out to us if you're interested. So from the start of the working group, at least from an industry perspective, we had an idea of what we thought was priority from a patient's perspective, especially in a drug development process. So we had this impression based on literature review, expert opinion, because rheumatoid arthritis, research and experience in rheumatoid arthritis had been going on for 30 plus years. So it wasn't that we wanted to bring something new to the table, but we wanted to help improve the measurement of what was already being measured so that the patient's voice could more appropriately be incorporated into our drug development processes. So in 2011, the working group, which consisted only of industry members, we put together what at that time was called the scoping stage summary document, and now is the initial briefing document. So at that time, we submitted to FDA what we thought was priority in terms of measuring symptoms and physical function. So we received feedback from FDA within a very quick turnaround time. And the key message was, yes, we agree with your proposals. However, we strongly recommend that you work with the scientific community and collaborate with them in moving this forward, which we knew as a working group was very important, because if you know rheumatoid arthritis and the measurement of that for clinical trials, it's a very complex composite primary endpoint. So changing that and being able to then compare rheumatoid arthritis therapies over time would be very complex and complicated. So this wasn't something that we could do from an industry perspective on our own. So Incalata worked very hard to network with experts at OMERACT, ACR, ULAR, to let them know what we were doing, but not necessarily saying, let's work together on this, even though that's what we really would like to do. So once we received the FDA feedback, it was clear to us that this was the opportunity to reach out to OMERACT, which was our professional organization that they wanted us to work with. And so Lee Simon, who's here today, and Vibeke Strand became the OMERACT representatives to our working group, and they are non-member voting participants of our group since 2011. So when Incalata was at OMERACT conference in 2012, this is when this idea of we need a stakeholder workshop to get everyone on the same page so that the rheumatoid arthritis working group can move forward. Because at this point, we were stuck. We could measure, we could develop a measure for stiffness, we could develop a measure for fatigue, we could do something for physical function, but these were things that the professional societies were already working on. So what they would be duplicative, and you know, we would need to get involved with them instead of more of us helping us to drive and have more backing for the funding that we needed in order to move forward. So the August 28th, 2012 workshop was then in the works. So just to give you a sense of where we were in the working group stages for qualification, we had already submitted the letter of intent. We had submitted the scoping document, and we were already on our vendor selection stage for our qualitative research. So this is when we had to put the brakes on that in deciding which vendor that we wanted to go to do our content validity stage, because we needed to have alignment and input from our stakeholders as to what we were going to get content validity for. So this is a discussion point later on, as when should stakeholders be involved? Because up until this point, it was only our RA working group members. I apologize, I have a slight cold. So the objectives that we, In organizing the workshop, it was Critical Path, CPATH, Incalata, myself, other working group members, and Lee and Vibeke helped to organize and determine what the objectives of our workshop would be and who were our key stakeholders that needed to be invited. It was very important, too, that we had to limit this workshop to 50 participants, because at the end of the day, we wanted to reach consensus so that the working group had a path forward and we knew, you know, what to focus on and how to move forward. So our objectives were to identify RRA-related concepts and to convene the stakeholders in one place. And one thing that you'll also hear later on from the panelists is that this was going to be an opportunity for the professional organizations to have a seat with FDA at the table, because over a period of time, they hadn't had that. So this was a great opportunity for everyone involved. So these are the representatives that attended the actual workshop. And as I mentioned, the panelists also were part of this attendee list. So at the end of the day, we didn't think that we were going to, but we did reach consensus. What came out of this was that the most important unmet need in RA is the measurement of fatigue. So it was agreed by all that the RA working group would move forward in putting together a package toward the qualification of a PRO measure for fatigue as a secondary endpoint. And since then, we have been working closely with OMERACT, and most recently with NIH PROMISE as part of our working group. And we are working towards submitting a new and revised scoping stage document, or initial briefing document, as it's now called. So one thing that I would say that came out of this, and Ashley alluded to this earlier, and that is benefits of working together in a consortium type of environment are partnerships, communication, shared learning, and discussing problems and challenges as you go along. And truly, this was achieved and is ongoing. So with that, we will go on to our panel discussion. And we have two themes. The first one is defining the value of stakeholder engagement early in the process of PRO development, and in particularly through the stages of qualification that we are confronted with. And then secondly, we'll discuss ensuring collaboration with appropriate stakeholders. And then we'll have time for some general Q&A. But before we get into the panel, are there any burning questions that you would like the panelists to address? Please feel free to step up to the mic and let us know, and we'll try to incorporate that as we go along. So our first theme, defining the value, is I would like Inkalated to talk a little bit about the working group perspective. But first, I would like to ask Amy, you participated in this workshop. So because it's a patient-reported outcome and patient is at the forefront of what we do, do you feel like through this workshop you had a voice, you had the ability to demonstrate what the patient's perspective was, and that did the stakeholder participants listen to you, and do you feel that the consensus was something that is important and relevant to you and your condition?
April, that's a great question. Hi, everyone. I'm Amy Leong, and I really don't have this low a voice normally. I have a little bit of head congestion as a result of that great plane ride from California. I had the great opportunity of attending that workshop and speaking at that workshop in 2012. My colleague and I, another patient advocate, and I were the only two in the room who were considered patients. Both of us had a history of something like over 110 years total experience with rheumatoid arthritis. We had a portion of the program where we talked about what was important to us in terms of overall key domains, if you will. yes, I would say that I had the opportunity to participate. One of the two patients presented has come forward and really demonstrated the role of Omeract, and I'd like to clear that up a little bit, because I wouldn't expect that you even would know what that is. Omeract stands for Outcome Measures in what used to be Rheumatology Clinical Trials, O-M-E-R-A-C-T. It is now called Outcomes Measures in Rheumatology. Since 2002, patients have been involved in this international collaboration of the development of outcomes measures as it relates to rheumatic diseases. Doctors Bingham, I'll just call him Bing. Bing and I worked together on one of different 40 different work groups. Lee Simon, to my other side of me, is one of the founders of Omeract. I was very, very impressed with the presentation earlier, right before lunch, in that one company moved everything forward under one rubric and came up with the exact pro. And I, as a volunteer, patient, but volunteer, am a member of the research team at the international level, so you can imagine what that entails. Language issues, time zone differences and conference calls, dealing with rheumatoid arthritis, and are you kidding? You want to call at 7 a.m. in the morning? Those kinds of things, because I'm in pain. We patients willingly and freely and voluntarily participate. And it's a very, very important thing. So yes, did I feel like I had a voice? I wish I would have been a part of this process earlier on. I think that there are, and as a patient advocate at the national and international level, there are those of us who get diagnosed and we're called patients. Chances are you may be a patient one day soon. There are those of us who then become advocates and are patient advocates, meaning you represent yourself well, or you represent your child, your son, your daughter, your husband, with your medical care. And then there are those of us, a third level, who are called patient advocate leaders, PALS. And I work at that level of recognized individuals who happen to have the disease or work in the field of the disease, who literally represent not only their organization, but work with a lot of other people besides patients in furthering the cause of PRO development, of increased research, increased advocacy. And the whole PRO development piece is a perfect opportunity for patient advocate leaders to participate. We know the experience, we know enough. Now, I don't have a PhD, and I hope you don't expect me to know that, but I know enough because I've served as an advisor at NIH and NIAMS to know enough about what is going on to ask and to translate complicated terms into practical words used by the patients, and vice versa, to translate what I'm experiencing or people like me are experiencing into words that researchers might be able to look at and delve more deeply. Thanks.
Thank you, Amy. And Kalita, so from your perspective, how did the stakeholder consensus workshop benefit the RA working group? And can you tell us a little bit about how it was a deviation from what traditionally we had been doing within CPATH at that time?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So first of all, I'm the co-chair of the RA working group, and we worked in this workshop together. So what was highly beneficial for us, so I'm representing also the pharma industry representative on this, and particularly the RA working group perspective, for us was really important to have this consensus and discussion amongst the stakeholders, having the experts and having the patients and the FDA sitting at the table. Now, I want to start by thanking actually those who made possible this workshop, which were actually Liz, who I saw earlier, as the previous working at the FDA and then being with the CPATH was very pivotal in the organization of this workshop, as well as the whole the great collaboration that we had with the CPATH and the FDA, because this is the point that it was very difficult for us So we were created in 2011. We had already submitted our scoping document. We thought we had the path forward. We had gone through the whole process of having the vendors coming and pitching to us, so we were really ready to launch the work. And then when we were trying to interact with the FDA whether this was the right path, because we knew from the experts that there were a lot of reticence and from the patients on had we chosen the right concept, we were at some point in time a bit stuck on the process of can we have a Type C meeting with the FDA, under what format that can be put. So that's why I started by thanking Liz and CPATH, because putting this under the framework of a workshop was what saved us, because it was completely under another format that none of the other working groups had had it before. And that's why we were very pleased for having the opportunity to have this panel session here, because this is, for those of you who don't know, who are outside of the CPATH, this is a unique, compared to the other working groups, this hasn't happened before. In general, the working groups, they have as it was mentioned earlier, is a letter of intent, the scoping document, is a path of developing the PRO, and this was unusual, and us in the RA working group, we found this as highly valuable, taking the time, although as we said, sometimes we feel frustrated because it has been taking us a long time to actually kick off the work, but it was very important to us to have that very to have that early stakeholder engagement. So for us was very beneficial. The only thing, and this is what we'll be discussing here, is when that type of stakeholder consensus workshop should have had taken place. So for us was, from our perspective, was slightly late, because we had 2 years had gone by, but better later than never. So we found a great deal of advantages of sitting together and agreeing together on the path forward.
All right, thank you. So Cliff and Lee and Amy, from your perspectives, how early do you think that academic experts and patients should be involved in our development process as we traditionally do in the CPATH process?
I'm Clifton Bingham. I'm a rheumatologist at Johns Hopkins, and I'm the academic representative, or one of the academic representatives for the group. And I think that, you know, we were pleased to be brought into the process, but I think that as you think about when to bring people in, it's important to think about the contributions that the individual stakeholders can actually bring and what the value is of that. And I think, you know, the academic community has a lot of what I would say knowledge, but I think importantly wisdom in terms of not only what has worked and what we've published, but all of those things that didn't work that we already know that never got published. And that stuff that again is wisdom that our community holds and shares. So in this particular instance, the working group was moving forward with a concept of RA-related signs and symptoms, but we had already learned and knew and found out and prioritized what those were through careful international qualitative research that had gone over a period of 4 years leading up to this. Amy was part of that work, and this is work that I led and alluded to earlier, looking at flares and rheumatoid arthritis. And I just wanted to put sort of this picture up because I think it tells you how academics can approach things and have this wisdom. So we did a joint consensus exercise at Delphi with a couple of hundred RA patients and physicians from, or clinicians from around the world, and asked to prioritize different domains. Now the domains had also been identified through separate Delphi exercises and qualitative work. Those had been prioritized. We fed the same domains to both groups and asked for joint ranking. And this is, the level of agreement is on the vertical axis. And the things in blue are what we already measure in all of our clinical trials. All the things in white, and you notice that those are on the right, on the other side, are all the things that patients identified and said, this is what our RA is about, guys. You're not measuring it. And I think that it really puts into perspective the types of work that the world may have. And again, this work at the time was not published. that this was happening. This had been work that we had that had been going on for a number of years. But I think what you see is that we already knew what the signs and symptoms were. Trying to put this together into an aggregate measure would be extremely difficult because we are at the stage of defining the concepts of the symptoms. And one of the things you see is fatigue. And we've worked since 2002 or 2003 with OMERACT, where patients actually said, fatigue is important to us. So with fatigue, we already had extensive qualitative work that had been done. We had instruments that had been developed. We have conceptual frameworks for that singular domain. And I think as a result of what we did, and Amy can chime in on this, at the meeting, we were able to bring all of this experience and wisdom to say, there are a number of important RA signs and symptoms, but what we have to do, we already know what our top priority is from our patients, which is fatigue. And we need a measure that will address that symptom first. So I think that, again, we changed the concept of what was being measured and what was important. We already knew what the gaps were. And we also, luckily, I think, had experience in stakeholder engagement itself, especially how to effectively engage patients in this activity. So I think the earlier the better. You know, there is wisdom out there. We don't just write grants all of our lives in papers. and I think we can add an awful lot. And one other thing is that we have a lot of networks nationally and internationally of people that are actually probably excited to be your partners, where you can get well-characterized patient populations and clinical information rather than going out and trying to find it yourself from a company that might not know or have the type of information that you actually need.
It's interesting because having grown up as a rheumatologist, it's not something that you can measure easily. So therefore, we've been always very interested in understanding from the perspective of the patient what it meant to get better. I was always so incredibly interested in patients, my patients, I saw patients for 30 years, in my patients who would tell me, you know, you're talking to me about my x-ray, but I can't sleep at night, or I can't really have a relationship with my spouse. Why don't you talk to me about what I care about? And fortunately, having a boutique practice, I could spend an hour and a half and talk to them, which we can't do anymore. But nonetheless, I learned that these are important issues that patients care about. And if I'm going to make them better as a clinician, we had better measure those things to know what therapies make a difference. And personally, I believe that the OMERACT process, which means, or in fact, the PCORI process that's now been adopted, where you take patients, stakeholders, from the beginning, from the initiation of thinking about what is the context of what you want to measure, and not tell them what it is you think you should be measuring, but actually ask them, as well as we are asked, and we work together to collaboratively develop a methodology to answer the question. I, one time in my life, was a regulator here in the States, and that context of understanding what's meaningful to the patient is so critically important to understand why you might develop a drug to make them better. And so therefore, having all the stakeholders at the table from the beginning is the most powerful way to determine the right outcome.
I just want to add to that, on the schematic, that XY axis, I don't know, April, if you can go back to it. What was not clearly delineated was actually the colors that we actually see here. Mm-hmm. So the things that were assessed to be important to us as patients didn't even fall on the radar screen of health professionals, healthcare professionals. And the things that did fall up on there, and you can see over on the far left-hand side, it was things like MD Global, the labs, you know, those, the patient global, joint count, swollen joints, things like that. But what really appealed to us were those things for which we really either had no measures or the measures were not good enough. The fatigue, the sleep, the, I can't read it very well, self-management, participation, those kinds of things, just as Lee has said. So we've got evidence of that after years of work on this. And so the idea of the RA working group working with us, and when I say us, it's patients and healthcare professionals and clinicians and biostatisticians from how many countries, Lee? 35, 45, 55 different countries, all doing it voluntarily, by the way, all voluntarily, is pretty amazing. And those patients who are participating in OMERACT, we do so because we have a disease, and this is a vicious disease. For those of you who are not on that RA working group, you need to be on this RA working group. It will stop you in your tracks. I got diagnosed when I was 18. By the time I was 24, I was completely wheelchair-bound. I spent five and a half years in a wheelchair, having my parents feed me. And I was afraid that they might die and what would happen to me. It took me a great deal of time to finally figure out how to talk to my healthcare professionals as friends and begin to ask questions. And that resulted in the next 18 years of surgical interventions. So you're looking at someone who's benefited from your research in medical devices and in technology and in new science, who is now totally functional, got off Medicare disability, and now travel the world motivating people to be a part of their solution. And so that's a very, very important piece. So we can, and we hope to be your partners.
Thank you. Ashley and Sarah, from your perspective from the FDA, do you think it's important to have experts and patients in this early stage of defining what should be measured and how it should be measured? And you know, how important do you think that is from your perspective?
So I'm with the Division of Pulmonary Allergy and Rheumatology Products. So we're the review division that reviews a lot of the drug development applications for rheumatology. When we evaluated the scoping document that was submitted by the RA Working Group, we did it in the context of, you know, a long history of following the lead of the American College of Rheumatology and the OMERACT group. FDA collaborated with them early on to develop very effective tools that we used for primary endpoints. The field sort of blossomed and became a very mature, desirable development area. The labels also blossomed. So the labels were, you know, 50-page tomes with tons and tons and tons of data in them and statements in them. So when we got a scoping document that said, oh, we want to add yet another measure in the label, we want to measure something else, we took a step back and really wanted to get buy-in from the academic research community and the patient communities on what really was important, because we were a little skeptical, to be honest, that there was something important that could be added to the 20 pages of the clinical study section. And so we really wanted to be sure that if we were going to add something new, that it was something that the community felt was important and relevant. And so we thought that even to the extent of identifying the concept of interest, that the rheumatology community and the patient community needed to be involved. And I think that, I don't know how unique that is. I know in rheumatology we're very blessed to have a very organized clinical research community. Maybe in other areas it wouldn't have been quite the same decision, but for us it was easy.
So I wholeheartedly agree with what everyone has said, and it seems to be a consistent theme that patients and experts, and I would add regulators, mm-hmm. should be talking very early and making these decisions together. You know, even as early as just thinking about what is the concept that we want to measure, you know, in developing an instrument, we of course include patients and experts and regulators, but even before we get to that stage, I think it's important to bring in patients, all stakeholders, to decide on what it is that we're trying to measure so that we don't start going down a path that is in conflict with someone, another group's thoughts or what they've learned and just haven't published yet. The earlier the better, and you know, the more stakeholders that we can get together in a room, the better. And I think this workshop was a great example of that.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. Cliff, you have one more thing?
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in on one of the things that she said that I think is not, you know, it's been said a few times, but I think I just want to drive home the point. I'm actually writing a PCORI grant that's due in a couple of days. This is on my mind a lot, but it is the concept of engaging stakeholders and identifying who those stakeholders are. But from the very first, I mean, in a PCORI application, you have to be clear on how you have engaged multiple stakeholders, including patients, in defining the question that your research will be addressing. And if that is not present, you're triaged, you don't get looked at anymore. So that's a criterion for evaluation of a grant. But I think it speaks volumes to the fact that that is a necessary part. So defining these things like the context, defining the things like what you want to measure, if you're not getting it, the primary information, if it's just you have a drug that you think is going to work on X, Y, or Z, that, in my opinion, wouldn't cut the mustard. But I do think that it's one of the things where there is growing experience on how you do stakeholder engagement. There's a tremendous amount of information that's been funded by ARC, HRQ, for instance, and now PCORI in developing methodological standards for stakeholder engagement that I think are worth paying attention to. Because I think it will move us a lot further along. But I think, again, that even that fundamental point of what you think your question is may not be the right question.
And to take that one step further, we heard this morning that drugs are approved in the United States on how patients feel, function, and survive. And then there was another statement made about clinical relevance. And that's very important. But what that word, relevance, now means is much more complex than I think it was conceived of at the beginning. Because meaningfulness, and you already heard someone already mention from the podium about responsiveness, maybe it's not an adequate term, when in fact responsiveness is really critical. You can measure a difference from a comparator or from a placebo, but does that difference mean anything to anybody? As everyone here knows, you get enough patients in each arm, you might be able to get statistical significance. Where that yet is a non-meaningful difference. You heard MID, the meaningful differences, and that could be a statistical argument, but we believe that it's really important to determine if it's meaningful to the stakeholder, to the patient who's going to actually be improved. So when we term it's got to be clinically relevant, we believe that it has to be explored that, in fact, a change is meaningful to them. And we actually do qualitative as well as quantitative research to ascertain whether that's critical or not. We're preparing for our next OMERAC meeting in Budapest next week, where a major component of that discussion will be arguing, and trust me, major arguments are going to ensue about minimally clinically important difference, minimal important difference, and whether that's even meaningful at all compared to what's clinically relevant or responsive done. So it's really an area that's grown, and I think it cannot be done appropriately without actually every stakeholder being at the table from the get-go to discuss these issues.
Yet another issue is the level of knowledge that we patients need to have in order to be meaningfully engaged in PRO development, in outcome measures development, in PCORI grant reviews, NIH study sections, and it's all happening now. I was at a meeting a couple weeks ago, and lots of patient advocate leaders there. And there were clusters of us gathering over by the watering hole talking about how, and we're all from cancer and a variety of different chronic disease areas, how there seems to be a lack of a way that we patients can get educated so that we can contribute meaningfully in these research development of research questions, in looking at the implementation and what could be a double-blind, randomized control study, those kinds of things. OMERACT has a way of educating we patients. We actually have about an hour, hour and a half each day of a 5 or 6 day meeting, once in the morning and once at night, where we actually go through, this is what's going to happen today, and then at the end of the day, this is what happened, and it gives the patients an opportunity. Now, all different kinds of diseases are represented in those patients, to sit down and really talk to one another about, well, that's not what I heard. What did you mean by that? Well, we're sitting down with the top researchers in the world who will come spend 15, 20, 30 minutes with us at different intervals to update us and reinforce what we should have learned or to give us an opportunity to ask questions. PCORI is defining ways where we can get this education. NIH has different ways where they're trying to figure out how patients can be involved in study sections. So this is all moving forward. And I would say also in PRO development, there's an opportunity for similar kind of training. Just a suggestion.
Right, thank you for addressing, I think, why it's important to involve stakeholders early and when. So now we can switch gears to how we involve stakeholders. And let's just spend like about 5 minutes on this since we're getting close to the hour. But Ankalita, can you share a little background as to currently how academics and experts are how their input is sought and how we engage them currently, as well as patients and when they become involved. And then after you summarize, if everyone on the panel could give their perspective of when you think or how you think you should be involved.
Yes. So to give you the, again, because this is the experience of the RA working group, but other working groups are working differently. So in terms of when the stakeholder engagement takes place, in general, and this was going to be the case for us also, is once you have defined your target concept and you start your qualitative phase, there is an advisory panel with experts that get involved in the process of developing the new measure. The way that the patients get involved is during the content validity phase through the various patient interviews. The patients are instrumental in telling their experience and giving us an understanding of the burden of disease. But once we reach out to them, the concept has been chosen. So we go to them through the vendors who are performing the work for documenting the content validity, asking them about their experience with open-ended questions and then closed questions. But there is already an idea where we're trying to go. So, and then in general, there are working groups. This is a continuous advisory panel that gets involved in their efforts as well as the patient interviews until the saturation is reached. We felt through this great experience that we had with the stakeholder engagement that it was very interesting to really carefully think how we engage the stakeholders. Because we had also the feedback from the FDA that we needed to work closely with the OMERACT, we had two OMERACT representatives and most recently from PROMIS also as non-voting member participants. We don't have a patient representative as a RA working group member. So currently in our working group calls, we have the OMERACT representatives who are with us in the call and we'll be working with them to have that definition of the conceptual framework of fatigue. So we felt, and this is the perspective from the industry, more specifically from the RA working group, that having a continuous collaboration with them, and actually even this workshop is an example of how we continue working together, is so again, because earlier actually maybe it might sound like we're forgetting regulatory. I'm taking for a given that we're working with regulatory on this. So the ones that we didn't have was academia and the patients. So working together, and we have had quite few teleconferences actually with the FDA, even after the consensus workshop, we have found it as very beneficial, this other format of working. So I don't know from your perspective, as April started saying, how do you think, what would be most beneficial from the good function of the working group is this stakeholder engagement within the process of the PRO development.
Ashley, do you want to start?
I was writing a note to myself and I missed your question.
Okay, please, we'll start.
So in terms of the how, I mean, I started talking a little bit about this, but the first step, I think, is identifying the who, and part of the how is really thinking about who the who are, and it's not just the doctors. It might be, if you think about engagement, the nurses, the occupational therapists, the physical therapists, the rehabilitation, the pulmonary therapist. Depending on the disease, there are multiple perspectives on health and impact. I think, too, that you can think about assembling groups that would include both academics, but also the guys that are going to be using the information, too, the clinicians and some of our clinical academicians. And then thinking about not just patients, but the diversity of disease characteristics that you need represented within the patients, people early in their disease, people with long experience in their disease, people with different characteristics of potentially heterogeneous diseases, and then you can really get fancy and think about payers and healthcare systems and comparative effectiveness researchers and others. But I think that it's important to put some thought into that first piece of the how. Professional societies, I think, are a great place to start in identifying the people and the key groups that are involved. And I'll leave it at there. Oh, and I think how throughout the process, it's iterative. It's something that continues to evolve and change. And as I think the beauty of having stakeholder work, doing it within existing projects that we have, is how incredibly rich that makes the experience, increases the buy-in from the very beginning, from everybody having a role and having at least a perception that you have a voice that's being heard. But actually making, providing evidence that you are actually incorporating those suggestions into the work that you're moving forward. So I think those are, these might sound like simple things, but they're actually pretty foreign concepts when you actually look and see how people engage stakeholders.
Ashley?
Thank you. I think that the methods for stakeholder engagement are still being defined and refined. So in general, I think that FDA, we're supportive of pursuing those stakeholder engagement methods and incorporating patients, experts, all of the stakeholders to the fullest extent possible. But I'll leave those stakeholder engagement methods aside for some other people. But I do want to talk a little bit about how to engage with FDA throughout this process. And I think that sometimes through the qualification process in particular, groups think that they have to put together these huge submissions every time they want to talk to us about something. And it becomes a very onerous task to be able to just have a discussion with us. And I think we found working with the RA working group that it's very useful to share some information, brief information. What are some of your questions in advance? And then we can have a teleconference with SEALD and the division and the biostatisticians and help answer some of these questions that are slowing down progress or that need to be talked about. And so the submissions don't have to be huge. Mm-hmm. Short submissions, questions, teleconferences are a great way to interact with us. Multiple submissions, and I guess I also hear sometimes that groups are afraid to come to talk to us. and I don't understand that. I think we're here to help. And so I would encourage that, take every, you know, whatever opportunity you have to engage with us, and we're willing to try to help answer questions, particularly in the qualification process where we really can have that active partnership and dialogue.
All right, thank you. In lieu of time, we need to move on to open it up to the floor. If there's any questions, we'll take a couple questions, but then we need to respect the time of the next panel. But it's been a great discussion, and thank you, panelists. Any questions?
I just wondered if there was any internal resistance as companies go forward to do these types of things, and companies are also cognizant of their budget. Did it take the FDA coming back and saying, you need these experts, before you could get internal buy-in to do what you did?
And Kalina, do you want to take that?
No, and it happens that I've been with two different companies during the process of working in the RA working group. I know that I had the support from really engaging and working with the patient and experts to truly ensure that we are measuring the right thing. So it was an encouragement coming from the companies that I was working to ensure that we were doing the right, doing this in the right way, and doing this early.
Any other questions? Yes, Amy, please.
I've had this burning thing I've wanted to talk about that we patients get pretty regularly if we're asked to represent being a patient, quote unquote, on a variety of different panels or at PCORI or at ARC or at NIH, is the assumption that Amy then represents, you know, 400,000 people in the United States with rheumatoid arthritis. And it is such a daunting thought that we cannot go there. What we can do is think about it's the first time that a patient has been asked to be engaged in a conversation, in a conceptual conversation that has some research merit for which hopefully there will be some implementation. But to think that one person can be selected that meets a variety of different criteria and the diversity of the United States and all those kinds of things is such a daunting perspective for we patients that I ask you not to go there. And the first part of just thinking about what kind of criteria of a patient you may wish to have, at least initially on some PR development working group or whatever, is to me an important way to go. But to not put that kind of burden on me, that's very, very important. But at least it's the beginning. Because, you know, once the floodgates open up, there'll be many more people, as you know, through social media who want to tell you their story, who want to share that and more with you. And, you know, how are you going to filter that data? But the opportunity to even sit at the same table with you is an absolute honor. So I hope that you will consider that.
And one last comment, Lee? No? Okay. Wow. thank you all for your experiences.